and then come back. So that was kind of like the beginning.
Nice. Well, shout out to UCLA getting you prepared for
Shout out to UCLA, man.
that transition. Also to yourself and showing that resilience. Definitely with the consistency in this entertainment game. So you have a colorful career ranging from Mission Impossible to Aliens, most recently Beauty in Black. What specifically drew you to the role of Horace?
Wow. Quick little story about Horace. I was sending in tapes and going on meetings, and I was working. And when this offer came in for me to send in a tape, I was really at a point where I was tired and I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to send in the tape, but there was something in the back of my head that kept going and going on, and it was this phrase that 90% of success is showing up. And so I thought, let me just do this, let me just do this video and send this audition in, and if I get one clean without making a mistake, I'll send it in. So I'm doing this tape, this audition for Beauty in Black, and I'm reading the character and I'm falling in love with the character. I'm just like, wow, I love this guy. He's got so many levels, there's so many. And so I'm doing the audition, but I'm tired and it's late at night. And so I'm reading with my wife, and she's behind the camera, I'm in front, and I'm reading the lines, and I get halfway through the lines and the scene, and the character coughs. And so I cough. But as I cough, she said her name. And then I say in character, "I didn't hear you." And then she says the line, and then we finish the scene. Well, that is the audition tape that I sent in, mistakes and all, because I felt it had the essence of the character. And even though I've made a mistake in the middle of it, I didn't lose character. And I thought that is the essence. And I can do it over and over again and get it without the mistake. But I thought that's the essence. And that's the one I sent in. And that ended up being the one that got me the job. Then I met Tyler, and we talked about the role extensively. And I realized the journey of this character. And that's really when I fell in love with the character.
No, he has quite the journey for sure, and the layers that you mentioned. I think that was the beauty of the character, and all of the characters in particular, but Horace in particular definitely peels back the layers, and you see his journey from beginning to end. Now, were you reluctant at all in playing the character, given his presumably being DL or bisexual?
Good question. This is the thing. I have played so many different characters, and most of them, I'm not those characters. An alien, I was a Marine, and I'm not a Marine. So I've played cops, I've played doctors, I've played gangbangers, I've played all these roles. And one of my fellow actors had once said to me that he was interviewing me for something, and he said something about when you want to achieve greatness, you have to find a way to feel comfortable with the uncomfortable. And this character had all these different things that I loved in a character, but it didn't have something that made me feel uncomfortable until it was that. And the reason why I say the possible the curiousness of being bisexual, that added the danger level that I wanted. That added the challenge that I wanted. That added something that another layer to this character. Because when you first meet this character, you think he's a working class guy with a limited income, and you find out later on that he's a multimillionaire. When you first meet him, you think that he's could be quite passive. And later on, you find out this is the guy that you really don't want to fuck with. When you
Yeah.
first meet him, you feel that he is he could he is he's homophobic, and he has a disdain for homosexuality. And later on, you find out that maybe he's gay. And so all these layers is what made this character so great to me. And Tyler told me, he said, "Rico, I want to bring him in slowly because I want to give us some room to grow with him." He says, I want him to be mysterious. I don't want to give anything away. Because a lot of the other characters in the show, when you see them, it's almost like what you see is what you get. And if it's blue, it's going to be blue. If it's red, it's going to be red. When you see him, you don't know what he's going to be. So he's almost like a blank canvas. And then slowly, little spots of color just start splashing on the canvas. And before you know it, you're getting this picture of this thing. And you're not quite sure what it was, what it is yet, because the painting isn't complete. And so we're still working on completing that painting. But I see, I have read and I have seen the finished product. So I love what we have. I love where we're going. There was a challenge to me because I think for those who've seen the show, and I'm going to try not to give any spoilers, but a lot of the characters are heated characters. A lot of the characters, they wear their passion on their sleeves, you know, and so there can be at times a lot of shouting or people getting emotional. I based my character off of my father. And the one thing, my father was a big man, and he was a big man in Chicago, and not in sort of like an executive for a company, but in the hood, he was a big man, physically and metaphorically speaking. And my father never shouted. He never raised his voice. And as a matter of fact, when things got loud, he would often lower his voice. And people would stop talking so they can hear what he had to say. And so I based the character on my father because I needed to find this alpha male that didn't, he didn't shout. He didn't blow his horn about what he possesses, the power he possesses. But you discover it as if you're with him long enough. And so I based it. And it was a difficult thing to do because often with actors, you get in a room, you get in a scene, and everybody's shouting or emotional, and the volume gets loud. And then, before you know it, you're getting loud too. And it's almost like, you know, it's a competition or something. And I had to keep reminding myself, that's not you.
Right.
That's not
Uh,
you.
I I love that because I see the thread and the similarities of how you mentioned using that method acting and tapping into your father, and then also the direction with Tyler Perry in terms of letting him Horace the character slow cook. That's definitely evident. And I think also another layer to that is he also has prostate cancer and is dying. So you never and we never know what we're going to do in that situation or what we would be curious to do. You know what I mean? So well said.
Yeah, I like the way you put that. I'll use that in future interviews, but it is a slow cook for Horace. It's a slow cook, and you don't want it to boil. You
Right.
know, you
Nice
don't
simmer.
want him to boil. It's simmering right now.
Right.
And the fact that that Horace has prostate cancer adds yet another level to the character that we're talking about, and. If a person, and if you know somebody out there, people listen to this, they know somebody out there who has dealt with a chronic disease or have had something happen to them where they almost died. From that moment on, you see life differently. You have a depth, you have a wisdom that someone who hasn't experienced that, they don't have that. And
Absolutely.
they can intellectualize it, but they haven't felt that. And when you have that experience, then you don't sweat the small shit like other people are more inclined to do. You can see the bigger picture because you've been there or you're in there. And I think because he has prostate cancer and his life is on the line, I think he knows he doesn't have time for some of these things that aren't important in the big picture. I also think that he is one of those people, one of the characters in the show, one of the few characters in the show, that maybe he is not just looking to get all he can get. Because we see often in life, in the lower levels of income, people are struggling for the crumbs. But even people at the top, it's like a drug. Money is like a drug. And no matter how much you have, it's not enough. I remember watching this one TV show. And they asked this guy who was playing the richest man in the world, How much money do you need? And the answer was more. And so I feel like because Horace is going through all these things, he is no longer chasing the carrot. He's looking at life very differently, and he's looking at how he's going to leave his life. And with two sons and the way my sons are, he's in a bind, because he wants to leave what he's built up for generations. Often in the Black community, we talk about generational wealth, which we often don't have. When we pass away, we don't leave anything to the kids so they can have a nice jump start on life. So creating generational wealth is a very important thing, and it's a very rare thing in our community. He has created this generational wealth, but it is said that you can create generational wealth in 3 generations, but it can be lost in one. And his fear, I think, is that it could be lost with his sons. And so it's a very difficult time for him, and he doesn't have a lot of time to deal with this. And the sons are who they are. They're grown men, and they're who they are. So it's a bond.
Absolutely. And just to piggyback off you with what you said, my father was actually diagnosed with prostate cancer 2 years ago. And you can see the taking life more seriously, being the mortality of it and being intentional. So that's definitely you're dead on with that. And I mean, as of late, he is healthy, which I'm grateful for. And
Oh, good.
you're a second term and second term board member with SAG and AFTRA. Share your experience with that role, and what does that role entail?
All right, I'm gonna give you a scoop on something. And I'm not saying this to pat myself on the back, but I'm saying this because this is what happened, and it is it's a lesson to actors out there that if you have the right intention and the right energy, you can move mountains. So I joined the board after the second. I don't know if you remember, there was a hashtag Oscar So White. And it happened 2 years in a row where there wasn't a single person of color nominated for anything. And it happened the first year, it was very embarrassing for Hollywood, very embarrassing. And then the next year it happened again. Not a single person of color was nominated for anything. And I thought, I'm going to join the Screen Actors SAG-AFTRA board with the primary purpose of trying to change that, trying to change casting. So I went and joined, I went and ran for it. And luckily I was elected into office. I got the position. The term lasts, I think, for 3 years. I did 2 terms. It took that long to get it done. But I, with this energy, this newfound energy, I went straight to the EEO committee and told them that I had this idea. I wanted to change casting because I felt like casting had been based on a 1950s white family, white stories concept, and it hadn't really changed very much. And if you do see a person of color in there, they're in there for a reason. They're in there because they're in the hood or something like that, or so they needed a prostitute or a pimp or something like that, or they're in a small role where they needed somebody to die and get shot. And I just felt like, through my experience being in this business so long and having gone through experiences where one example I gave was I had an audition for a job, and Matthew McConaughey was a man in this job, and it was for a 3-part commercial, and he was the man in this Lincoln commercial. But yet they sent me a monologue. They wanted me to do a monologue. But he had just won an Oscar. I'm thinking maybe he's not the guy anymore. Maybe they're looking for a new guy. I says, whatever. I don't care. They sent me this monologue. They're going to get me in this monologue. And so I go in here and I do this monologue bomb. And I kill it. And I knew I killed it because as soon as I finished this monologue, the room was quiet. And a lot of times in Hollywood, they're very PC. You'll finish your monologue. They go, oh, very good, very good. Thank you. And then you go. They were quiet, so I knew
Your
I had
response is the best response.
it. Exactly. So I walked out. I get in my car, and before I can get home, I get a call from my agent. They offered me the part. And the thing was that I remembered During the second commercial, one of the people from Lincoln came up to me and he says, you know, he was a writer. He says, when we wrote this, we had in mind an Englishman playing this role, or maybe a Russian. But when you came and did your audition, the director said, that's the guy, make it fit. And
Nice.
so they cast off of talent as opposed off of type. They cast off of what you brought into it as opposed off of the complexion you came in with. And so I tell the story to the board and I tell them, I think that we should have in Hollywood that you cast off of type. I mean, off of talent. So whoever comes in there, if they shine, whoever they are, if they're obese, if they're gay, if they're a woman, if they come in there and they shine and they shine, make it fit. And so the president of the board, the committee voted me to be vice chair because I came in with all this energy, and I became vice chair. And Jody Long, who is now the president of SAG in Hollywood, she was the chair. She was the chair. And then we had this other woman who was on the national board. And the three of us, we crafted up this language. We used the language that they had, and we changed it. And we said that we think that every casting director should have this. And when you go to on a casting and right now at this time, you'll see that it says that we cast no matter what color, what sexuality, all this. There's a statement there that we're casting, we're inviting all of you to come and play. And whoever shines, that's how we're going to go. And unless it's something where it's a family member or something like that, that's the intention. And within 2 years, Vaughn, it was as if there had been a memo that went around Hollywood. Because one of the things I also made very clear to them, that you're leaving money on the table. When you just cast an all-white show, people will tune in, but they'll tune out. But when you cast a show that's similar to the ethnic breakdown of America, people will tune in and they will stay in. And there are also so many different stories that we're all telling stories from one aspect. People have heard it so much. So these other stories are very interesting to people. And so we got in there, we changed the language, and within 2 years, it was like a memo had gone out in Hollywood that either they're going to change casting or they're going to change those people. But they felt that there was money they were leaving on the table. And I gave them example after example of the money that they had been leaving on the table. And examples of, case in point, the Furious Five, the series about the movies about the fast car drivers. I gave them that as an example because that was something that had a cast like the United Nations. It had black, it had white, it had brown, it had gay, it had straight. And when the first movie came out, the box office number came back and it blew the producers away. And the second one came out, it blew them away again. The third one came out still on Furious Five, they were still surprised. But one of the producers was a black guy. He says, I wasn't surprised. He says, because I knew everybody that went to see that movie, they were invested in that movie. They saw themselves in that movie. And so that's why it worked. And so I gave them examples after that, and we got it done. And now when you look at television, you look at commercials, you see a great deal of difference than you saw 5, 10 years ago, because they understand that these stories are very important. And Tyler is one of the people who is responsible for that. You know, his shows have shown that if this is people, this is these are stories that people want to hear, and they make money. And Hollywood really is about the money. It's about the money. And Tyler is a
Exactly.
perfect example.
And that's a good point too about them, leaving money on the table. And thank you for your service and the efforts to create equality for marginalized actors and entertainers as well. Very much appreciated. Moving forward, you share the screen with other icons and legends like yourself who've been in the game, like Debbie Morgan and
Richard Lawson,
yes, Richard Lawson, who plays your brother.
he's my brother.
Yeah, what was that experience like, especially, I think it was like episode 3 or 4 where you guys have this explosive spat. What was it like working with them?
It's an interesting thing because those of us of our generation who have worked a long time, so many times when we walk on set, we would be the O and O, which is the one and only. Yeah. Right. And so even though I would see Richard and other actors in auditions, it was usually for one job. And it was one of us are going to get it and the others are going to go home. And so to have seen Richard for so long, Malik for so long in Hollywood, we've been in Hollywood for so long, Debbie, and never have worked together. And then to be pulled together in this project, I just knew that we were gonna rock it. I knew we had a solid foundation. When we had these four people together, I says, whoever you bring on after that, we're gonna roll. We're gonna roll with it. We could rock now because I knew we had a solid foundation. And what happens when you bring veterans onto a set is you raise the production value because a lot of young actors will see the veteran actors go places that, you know, without any hesitation that you have to go to for this character, put in the work, try things, not to be fearless, you know, with the character. And that can become contagious. You'll find that these young actors will step up their game because they know that, you know, it's going to show if you don't. And so I think Tyler's really clever, and I don't think he gets enough credit for his casting. He casts well. When he's directing, he moves so fast that he directs when he has to direct. But if you're rocking it, he will let you rock. And Tyler is one of these people where he gives you enough room to hang yourself, you know? And some of us take that and we go too far. And if you go too far, he'll pull it back when he needs to pull it back. But as long as you're doing your job and it's working, he's happy with it. If you mess up a line, let's just go back and let's get it. Because he's a one take director. He likes to do one take and get and keep it moving. And the first day on set, I remember they sent in like a stack of about an inch of pages, and I thought it was the first episode. And it was like, no, this is just what we're shooting today. And it was 81 pages we're shooting in one day. Normally, you shoot maybe 6 or 7 pages a day. We were shooting 81 pages the first day, and I remember thinking, what have I gotten myself into? 81 pages in one day, but I talked myself off that ledge by understanding that out of all the people in the cast, I am one of the few that has the most experience. But everybody has to do it at this pace. And if they can do it, then I can do it. And as a matter of fact, I should be able to do it better. And so I just tackled one scene at a time. There's no way you can, the way he shoots, he doesn't shoot in a linear fashion. He doesn't shoot from beginning to the end in a story. If we are at a restaurant, he'll shoot every scene we have at that restaurant there. If we are at your house, all the scenes that we have at your house, we'll shoot at your house. These scenes may be weeks apart, months apart, but we're shooting it all one after another. And so as an actor, you then have to know what scene came before this scene so I can get myself in the right state of mind, and what scene goes after this scene so I don't, so I can pitch myself correctly. And so I just focused on one scene at a time, and even while we're changing clothes for the next scene, they have readers on set that follow us and they run our lines while we're changing clothes for the next scene so that by the time we get on set, we're ready to go. And so Tyler will come on set. I'll be on set ready to do the scene. He'll come on set and he knows what the scene is about. He just wants to know my perspective. He goes, okay, Rico, what is this scene about? And I'm telling him the scene halfway through the time of the explanation. He goes, okay, Roland. Now I'm still talking and I'm finishing my explanation of the scene. And as I finish, he steps out away from the camera and goes, action. And at that moment, it's on. You know, that's the way he shoots, man.
Hey, that's good methods there, like and best practices for sure to keep you in the moment and engaged.
Oh yeah, everybody's present.
Rico, what keeps you motivated and inspired to continue to act?
Money. Money is an inspiration, but what keeps me work, 'cause there are other ways I could make money, but what keeps me in acting is the challenge. I love it, and I also feel like it's one of those arts where, you know, there's always room to grow. And as a veteran actor, you know, I have so much to pull from now that I feel like the best work could be in the future. And with this role, when it came up, this is what feeds the hunger for the art. It's playing roles like this, and you guys don't know where it's going, but you know, I think you got a picture, you got a taste of them from here and there. But I think this role is one of the things that keeps me drawn to this business because you get a chance to play characters that you would only dream about. And fortunately, they keep writing them. Fortunately, Hollywood now understands that there's money in them, and we keep rolling.